Heidi Dalsbyn.
Thank you. I'm sure she lied a lot because I don't speak Italian, so I don't know. But I'm not a professor, I'm an associate professor, so I'm not having the full title as a professor yet. So I live in Oslo, but I come from a small island, a very small island down. If you see Norway as a long thing, it's down there, the island. And this island, there didn't live many people there, but in summertime, all the tourists came to the island, or the summer guests, as we call them. And they took our beaches, and they took our paths, and they took our ice cream, and we loved them. But you know, the summer in Norway is short. So soon, the summer guests had to leave. And as soon as the summer guests had left, it was like the winter just poof, was there. And the winter on that island is not like the winter in rest in Norway, in the rest of Norway, which is a romantic thing with the snow falling down. No, it's no snow. It's like the wind is standing, having a party on the island. And as soon as the winter had arrived, they came out of their houses. They, who had lived inside the houses through the whole summer, away from the sins of the summer, with closed window and closed doors, they came out dressed. Can you hear me back there?
No, yeah, but so we need.
Oh, you are recording. I'm sorry. I didn't know that. Well, I lost half of the story. Who cares? You remember it. That's the most important thing. They came out dressed in black with white faces and red eyes, the very pure Christians of that island. And every Sunday, they used to meet in front of the church, talking about the things that had happened on that island that week. Except, yes, there is no life in this anymore. So I don't know if the person who records
it
will...
They are regulating it,
Except for Uncle Johan. Uncle Johan, he was the uncle of my mother. He was a very small man. He had no hair on his head. And he had a very thick, home-knitted jacket. And he had always big boots, and he chewed tobacco. He was sitting on a bench in front of the church, looking at the others. And one Sunday, as he was sitting there, the sky turned suddenly dark. It was early spring, and there was a lightning coming from the sky, hitting the earth. The earth opened, and poof, up from the earth came the devil. And I'm talking about the good old devil, the one from the medieval time, the one with horns, the one with a goat leg, the one with a tail. And everybody was crossing themselves and running away, except for Uncle Johan. Uncle Johan, he was sitting calmly on the bench. And the devil did all the devilish things, tricks he had from the medieval time, like changing shape, you know, the fire out of his nostrils. But Uncle Johan did not move. Soon, and I have to say that the devil was not in his good old shape. So soon, he was really tired. He sat down, surrounded by this thing you bring from the hell, and he had this asthma-like breath. And when he got his breath back, he looked at Uncle Johan, and he... Uncle Johan did not move. Then the devil asked him, "Why? Why are you not scared like the others? Why are you not running away like the others?" And Uncle Johan, he spat out his tobacco. He looked at the devil and said, "I've been married to your sister for 30 years. And that's the end of that story. And this is the kind of story I grew up with. A story that mixed imagined and real life into a believable blur. My theme is how to become a storyteller. I have to start from the beginning, I think. But to understand how to become a storyteller, one has to understand what the concept of oral storyteller is. Yes, the storyteller is a person who tells stories. It doesn't have to be more complicated than that. Yet, the concept of the oral storyteller is quite a new concept. We cannot compare it with the traditional storyteller that the folklorist collected folktales from 1800 up to the middle of 1900. The ones who were the informants of the collectors of folktales. Even though we do tell the same stories, but being a storyteller today in the postmodern world as an expressive art form, getting paid for being a storyteller is a new concept. In the Federation of European Storytelling Network called FEST, which is supporting this arrangement, I think, we did a survey among the storytellers of Europe. And the replies on this survey shows that the concept of storyteller today consists of both being a performer, but also using storytelling as applied storytelling, meaning that you use storytelling in context, or use stories in context where the performance is not necessarily the essential thing. This is analog with the postmodern art theory, where the art form is not longer just being aesthetic, but also where the social element is important in the art form, like community and participation. This is defined as a part of the art form, and these are theories by Erika Fischer-Lichter and, for instance, Claire Bishop, who supported this. So the storyteller today in the postmodern world is both someone who performs stories orally and someone who works with oral storytelling in contexts like schools, museums, library, prisons, just to mention some few. Yet, how do you become a storyteller today? Some few years ago, the French storyteller Abbé Patrix, which is one of the big storytellers of Europe, he had a short speech where he said that when he looked at those who became storytellers at the same time as he did, like 40 years ago, he saw that a common thing among the storytellers was that there was a lack of something. Quite often, the storytellers came from a two-cultural background where they had little contact with one of their cultural backgrounds. This lack of something is supported by Tom McGuire. He looks at the storytellers who comes from the theater, and he finds that those storytellers, they no longer believe in the dramatic illusion. They are lacking something, something more true. That's why they are seeking storytelling. They find this authenticity in storytelling. In my childhood, I grew up on a very remote, isolated island. So yes, I was lacking something. I was lacking friends. When I started school, which was on another island far away, I stopped speaking. I didn't speak for 7 years. But I had a head teacher, a rector, Rumelhoff, and it sounds like it comes from a novel by Harry Potter. Big black hair, he had a long black beard, and he had big hands, and he used to eat egg with salt in lunch. And we respected Rector Rumelhoff. I went to a very small school. So once a week, Rector Rumelhoff, he gathered all the students at the school. We had to walk into this room, and there were carpet on the floor, and we had to sit down, and in the middle of the room, there was a sort of a platform where Rector Rumelhoff would have his one-man show. So Rector Rumelhoff, he stepped on top of the platform He opened his mouth so he could see the egg bathing his soul down in his stomach. And then his tongue went out and in and up and down because he told stories. Not any kind of stories, but Norse mythology and king sagas. So for 9 years, every Friday, I heard Rektor Umlov telling stories. Yes? Let me see where I am in my schedule here. Yes, so a storyteller might arise from the lack of something, but also the storyteller needs a role model, I think. To become a storyteller, you have to encounter storytelling. You need to have the idea of what a storyteller is, which I was so lucky to grow up with, surrounded by storytellers. But maybe the question is also about why become storyteller today, when everybody are their own storytellers. I mean, there is no longer need to remember, because you are carrying devices that is keeping track of your memory. And you can easily publish experience with just one click that once would be the seed of a memory. In the 1930s, the philosopher Walter Benjamin said that there will be no need for storytellers in the future. He saw that stories died in the need for information. Today, we are even more surrounded by constant flow of information. We have the need to be updated all the time. So why do we become storytellers despite of this? There is probably a lot of reason for why I become oral storytellers today, but one thing which I'm curious about has to do with memory. Yes, you can save a lot on a hard disk, but we forget that a memory is not just stored. Memory is something alive. Memory is also depending on the meeting, on the presence of two persons. I remember because you remember. I understand who I am, because the meeting of the story shows something I did not know about myself. And then you have all the voices who no longer can utter themselves. Who can give life to them if not storytellers? And one of my favorite themes of those sort of forgotten stories, or the stories that was censored away, is erotic folk tales. So I'm going to tell you an erotic folk tale, if you dare to listen to an erotic folk tale. I mean, erotic folk tales, not even the folklorists would put the name on erotic folk tales. They publish them in a very secret magazine called Cryptadia, but not using their own name. So I'm going to tell you a Norwegian erotic folk tale. And when I say a Norwegian erotic folktale, do not think Arabian Nights or 1001 Nights, because this is not about beautiful cushions, it's about hard wooden floor, and it's not about beautiful princes and caliphs, it's priests and farmers, and it's not beautiful smell of herbs, it's smell of cow shit. So this is a story from Norway, and there was a farmer. And this farmer, he was very greedy. Everything he earned, he had in his chest. And the house he lived in, there was only one room in the house. He, the farmer, and his wife, they were sleeping in this room. He had a daughter, and the daughter, she was sleeping in the attic. And because he was a farmer, he needed help. He needed young, strong men to help him on the farm. And of course, these young, strong men had to share the attic with the daughter. One night, the daughter woke up. There were some strange sounds down there in the living room. She heard a bed going, She heard a mother going, She heard a father going, And the girl, she woke up. And she woke up the boy and she said, what's happening down there? Is father killing my mother? And the young man, he looked at her and the young man said, no, how am I going to address this? No, your father, he's brushing your mother. Oh, said the girl, is this nice? Oh, yes, very nice. So come on, brush me, said the girl. But no, the boy didn't have the equipment for that. And it was very expensive to buy it in the market. But the girl, she insisted on being brushed. So she said, tomorrow, I will go down to the chest of my father and I will take some of the money he has in the chest and you can go to the market and you can buy a brush. And they agreed on that. So early next morning, she went down and she, clearly, and she gave it to the boy and the boy, in his pocket. He went to the market, of course he didn't buy a brush. He bought himself something to drink, he bought himself something nice to eat, and when the evening arrived, he walked back to the farm. He climbed up on the attic, and the girl, she was lying there ready to be brushed, and the boy pulled down his trousers, and then he started to brush her. And this was the first time she ever had been brushed. It was completely new, and she went, and of course the father woke up and the father went and the young man, he was so scared that he and then he rushed down the ladder and he ran out of the house. The girl, she was not finished brushed, so she rushed down the ladder and she ran after the boy calling for her brush. The father, he was too old, so he's out of the story. They were running, the two of them, the young man first and the young girl, after him calling for her brush. They ran until they came to a river. There was a bridge over the river. And the boy, he grabbed the stone, he threw the stone into the river. And then he said, oh, I lost your brush. And then he walked on. The girl, she went down to the river. She pulled up her dress. She looked into the river to look for a brush. Now this is a Norwegian folktale. And in Norwegian folktales, there's one character who quite often, if not every folktale, appear, and that is a troll. And they usually live by the bridges and rivers. And a Norwegian troll is not a small, cute one. A Norwegian troll is huge. They are, you know, carrying trees on their heads, etc. So, of course, after a while, a Norwegian troll came by. And I have to say that this troll had taken a workshop. This troll, you know, the trolls were in danger of dying out. So the troll had taken a workshop to acclimatize himself to human beings, because trolls are eating human beings. But the troll was taking a workshop to learn how to sort of cooperate with human beings. So the troll, he was walking there and he had this mantra for himself saying, human beings are not food. Human beings are thinking things. And as he walked there, he saw the girl. And the workshop he was taking, you know, wasn't really a research-based workshop. But now, as he saw the girl, he thought, now he could test out the knowledge he had learned. He could see how close he could get to the girl before he started to feel the need of eating her. So the troll, he went down to the edge of the river and he said, what are you doing? Oh, I'm looking for my brush, the girl said. And the troll thought, this is going great. He wanted to test it even further. He wanted to help the girl. So the troll, he took off his trousers. He walked into the river to help the girl to look for her brush. The girl, she had been standing like this for a while and her back was tired. So she stretched herself. She looked at the troll and she said, ah, you found my brush. And before the troll managed to resist, she pushed the troll up on the beach. She pushed the troll down on his back. And she sat on top of the troll and she brushed herself, finished. And then she left the story. And there the troll was lying. He had not learned about this at the workshop. But what he knew in his 300-year-old brain was that it was the one who was lying on the ground who became pregnant. Now he had gotten himself into pregnancy. Oh, what a shame. But what would he give birth to? So the troll, he ran back home, he pissed into a glass, he called for a boy and asked the boy to go to the doctor to ask him what he would give birth to. So the boy, he took the glass of piss and he walked on his way, but it was early spring and he was walking in minding his own business. He didn't look, and then he stumbled and all the splash, troll piss was out of the glass. The boy, he looked around, he saw a cow, so he went up to the cow and got the piss. He went to the doctor and he got the answer and he went back to the troll and said, you're going to give birth to a calf. And the troll was so ashamed. So ashamed that he decided to walk into the world and continue to walk until he gave birth to this calf. And this he did. And for all I know, he's still out there walking. And that's the end of that story. And thank you for listening to me.
Thank you.